Okay, good morning. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues on the study, Genevieve Ames, Michael Duke, and Meng Jun Chen. And I have no relationships to disclose. I would like to acknowledge the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, the funder of our study. And I'd also like to express gratitude to the union members and their spouses and partners who participated in our study. I'd like to begin my talk by asking the question, why study intimate partner violence, or IPV, among dual earner blue collar couples, the group that is the focus of my presentation today. And to answer the question, I'm going to provide some background information. As many of you may know, although IPV occurs among all segments of the population, some groups are at higher risk than others. So there's some data that shows that lower socioeconomic couples, as measured by lower income, lower levels of education, blue-collar occupational status, are at higher risk for IPV compared to higher socioeconomic status couples, as measured by higher income, higher levels of education, white-collar occupational status. About 7 years ago, my colleagues and I entered into discussions with leaders of a construction union based in the San Francisco Bay Area that represents 35,000 construction workers in Northern California. And we told them that we were interested in carrying out a study about partner violence, drinking, and job stress among the members of the union and their families. And the union leaders were very receptive to this idea. They shared with us their concerns about problem drinking that some of their members had exhibited, as well as anecdotal reports of involvement on the part of some of their members with partner violence. So they welcomed us to collaborate on such a study. And we began with carrying out a pilot study on IPV using a small sample of 100 workers who completed an anonymous survey about partner violence and drinking and a few other factors. And so based on that small sample of 100 workers, 26% reported past year IPV, which is elevated when one compares that to estimates from the general household population. And two factors that were associated with the likelihood of reporting past year IPV were IPV normative beliefs and job stressors. Just want to tell you a little bit about IPV normative beliefs. So we developed, in preparation for this pilot study, we developed a new scale to measure IPV normative beliefs. And the scale measures perceived coworker, peer, and family member approval or disapproval for engaging in IPV. And this scale, we based the theory for the scale in part on work in the alcohol research world and normative beliefs about drinking, because the literature shows that perceived approval for one's own drinking is positively related to one's drinking and one's drinking problems. And we reason that a similar process may be going on with IPV. We also thought that there is a lot of potential here, or some potential, for prevention, because if IPV normative beliefs are related to actually engaging in IPV, normative beliefs can be altered. And therefore, there's a potential prevention strategy there. We did receive funding from the NIH in 2005 to carry out a large study based on this union membership, large study of IPV, drinking, and job stressors. And we've published some of those findings, and we have a total of 927 couples, male and female couples, within this large data set. And we already know that 20% of them reported past year male to female partner violence, and 24% reported past year female to male partner violence. Among the factors associated with partner violence in this large data set are male problem drinking, the male's unemployment, and both partners' levels of impulsivity and adverse childhood events. And the adverse childhood events is based on the ACE scale developed by Felitti and colleagues. Some of you may be familiar with that scale. We use the shortened version of that scale. That asks about, for those of you who are not familiar, it asks about adverse childhood events such as growing up with a problem drinker, childhood physical abuse, sexual abuse, and some other adverse experiences. Here's the theoretical framework for the model that we wanted to test in the study that I'm presenting today. We hypothesized that normative beliefs would mediate the association between one's background characteristics, which the background characteristics are shown on the left side of the slide, and the actual IPV behaviors, that is, male-to-female partner violence and female-to-male partner violence. We also hypothesize that each partner's work stressors and heavy drinking would moderate or exacerbate the relationship between one's normative beliefs about IPV and the actual outcomes. So our study goals were to determine if the associations between personal background factors and IPV are indirect and mediated through IPV normative beliefs, to determine if work-related stressors such as job stress and interpersonal conflict at work moderate the association between IPV normative beliefs and IPV, and to determine if the association between IPV normative beliefs and IPV is moderated by hazardous drinking. Our study protocol for the protection of human subjects was approved by the IRB of Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation. As I mentioned a few moments ago, the study was conducted with the support and collaboration of a large construction union. We carried out a cross-sectional health behavior survey using confidential telephone interviews of workers who were members of the construction union and their spouses and partners. I should mention at the outset that the overwhelming majority of the workers are male. There are some female workers. We did get some female workers in to take the survey, but the data that I'm presenting today is limited to male workers with female spouse partners. So we had a total of 1,088 workers who participated for a response rate of 53%. And we also had 927 of their spouses or cohabiting partners also take the survey. The data that I'm presenting today is limited to 502 dual earner couples, and that was necessary because we wanted to probe the impact of normative beliefs, and the scale does ask about one's perceived approval from coworkers, one's supervisor, so therefore these are limited to all employed partners, dual earner couples. We had dichotomous outcomes in this analysis of male to female partner violence and female to male partner violence. We used the physical assault subscale of the revised conflict tactics scale to measure past 12-month IPV. Each respondent was asked about aggression that they may have perpetrated and about aggression their partner may have perpetrated against them. Our independent variables included the demographic factors, occupational stressors, IPV normative beliefs, frequency of intoxication, and psychosocial factors. I realize that these numbers might be difficult to read. These are the sample characteristics. The average age of men was about 40, of women about 39. About 58 to 59% of the respondents were categorized as white. This is race ethnicity was self-reported. About 28 to 29% Hispanic. And then 12 to 14% were categorized as other for the purposes of this analysis, and that was divided among African American, Asian American, and those who describe themselves as multi-ethnic or multiracial. In terms of education, the women had higher levels of education than the men. You could see, for example, that 7% of the men were college graduates, but 21% of the women were college graduates. Okay, I'm going to skip the correlations. I have that data available if anybody wants to talk to me about that afterwards. Our analytic strategy involved the analysis of couples' data with structural equation models of male-to-female partner violence and female-to-male partner violence. We had path models with binary dependent variables. Continuous mediating and moderating variables were specified. And each partner's adverse childhood experiences, impulsivity, workplace conflict, job strain, IPV normative beliefs, and frequency of intoxication were the key predictor variables. Our control variables were each partner's age, race, ethnicity, education, and relationship length. Okay. And here are the significant paths for our final model. And basically, our hypotheses, for the most part, were not borne out. So in other words, normative beliefs did not mediate the association, for the most part, between background characteristics and the two IPV outcomes. Instead, you had direct path from the male's normative beliefs to male-to-female partner violence, and you could see that the female's normative beliefs had direct paths to both male-to-female and female-to-male partner violence. Likewise, our hypotheses about moderation were not borne out. There was no moderation, and instead we have direct paths. We have a direct path from male intoxication to male-to-female partner violence. The female's level of intoxication was not significantly associated with either of the IPV outcomes. I thought it was very interesting that both the male's and the female's psychosocial characteristics, that is, their level of impulsivity and their adverse childhood events, were significantly associated with their workplace stressors and with their frequency of intoxication. And I also want to point out the direct paths from female impulsivity to both types of IPV, as well as the male's impulsivity level in both types of IPV, as well as direct path from the female's adverse childhood experiences to male-to-female partner violence. In terms of implications for prevention and treatment, we think workplace-based prevention and health promotion could be very important for blue-collar workers. This could include union and peer-based counseling, as well as employee assistance programs. For couples who are not engaged in severe levels of violence, behavioral couples therapy may be an important treatment modality. And I'll just conclude by saying that we think that these are important findings. It's one of the few studies to really focus on blue-collar couples that are an understudied, at-risk population for IPV, and we think that our findings on normative beliefs do hold promise for potential prevention strategies.